Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, economists
Mahvash Qureshi
and
Siddharth Kothari
on the economic consequences of conflict and its lingering effects on sub-Saharan Africa.
We find that per capita GDP can be as much as 15 to 20% lower 5 years after the onset of conflict than in a no-conflict scenario.
A third of countries in sub-Saharan Africa are currently involved in conflict or experiencing post-conflict tension, driving an estimated 18 million people away from their homes and livelihoods. Conflicts impose huge humanitarian costs and can devastate economies. The IMF's latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa provides an in-depth analysis of conflict trends and the socio-economic challenges faced by countries in the region. Economists Siddharth Kothari and Mahvash Saeed Qureshi spearheaded this new study.
So is there more conflict today in sub-Saharan Africa than there was, say, 20 years ago?
So over the years, sub-Saharan Africa has been very prone to conflict. And in 2017 alone, about one-third of the countries in the region had some sort of violence or conflict. Having said that, the prevalence and intensity of conflict in sub-Saharan Africa has varied over time. The 1990s were particularly deadly in terms of conflicts. The genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda, the Eritrean-Ethiopian war, conflicts in Democratic Republic of Congo, Sierra Leone, and several other countries. And although, you know, it is extremely difficult to come up with accurate estimates of the casualties during conflicts, but according to estimates, the recorded number of deaths in the 1990s was over 800,000 in sub-Saharan Africa, which constituted about two-thirds of conflict-related deaths in the world. Mm. Then as these wars wrapped up in early 2000s, we saw a decline in conflicts. But then in the last couple of years, we have seen a worrying increase, which in a way mirrors the global trend that we also observe, that, you know, globally we see a rise in violence and conflict.
And so why is the region so prone to violent conflict?
It is very hard to pinpoint the drivers of conflicts. You know, it's a range of factors. In our analytical work, we do not explore this question directly. As to, you know, what are the drivers of conflicts. We instead focus on the consequences of conflicts. Mm-hmm. But the available literature, and there are many, many studies, both in economic and political science domains that have looked at this question. And what they typically find is that it's economic factors, social factors, political factors, and also historical factors. For example, low levels of economic development, weak growth outcomes, weak state capacity. Resource dependence also has been found to be strongly linked with conflicts, as different groups tend to, you know, fight to capture the rents associated with resources. So it's very hard to say, you know, it's one or two factors that it's also country specific, you know, different reasons contributing to increased conflict likelihood in different countries. But typically it's a combination of factors. Mm.
And Siddharth, the report talks about this a conflict trap. What is the conflict trap?
So this term, the conflict trap, it was coined by Paul Collier and Nicholas Sambini. And it was coined to capture this idea that conflicts tend to be very persistent. Once a country enters conflict, it finds it very hard to come out. And why is that? So one reason could be that a vicious cycle develops between conflict and economic performance. So you enter conflict, that leads to lower growth, bad development outcomes, and that can reinforce conflict. It can become harder to exit because of the poor economic performance. And of course, once a conflict starts, it can give rise to new grievances, it can leave a legacy of atrocities, all making the grounds fertile for prolonged conflict. The flip side is that this vicious cycle can potentially be turned into a virtuous cycle. If good policies are put into place, inclusive development takes place, then that doesn't just lead to improved development outcomes, but it can also reduce the probability of a country relapsing into conflict.
Mm. And obviously that's difficult to do during a conflict. How much are the economic consequences of a country being in conflict, how much does that spill over the borders, and how disruptive can that be for the region?
Right. So one of the key findings in our chapter is that conflicts can have very large spillover effects to nearby regions and through several channels. Mm. So the effect of conflict isn't just felt locally where the conflict takes place, but also in nearby countries, nearby regions within a country. Now, what are these channels? So there is, of course, a direct spillover channel, right? A conflict in one region can easily spread into nearby regions, and that's a direct spillover. But then you can also have indirect spillovers where the conflict doesn't itself spread to a nearby region, but the nearby region experiences other effects. For example, the nearby region could have lower economic growth because of, say, disruption of trade routes or because of increased uncertainty. And we do find evidence for this channel in our research. We find that growth is lower not just where the conflict occurs, but also in nearby regions. Another potential spillover is that conflicts can lead to increased social strains, especially if there's a large influx of displaced persons.
So migration is an issue.
Right. And this is especially true in sub-Saharan Africa. In 2017, the stock of people who are refugees who have originated from sub-Saharan Africa stands at about 6 million people. And an additional 10 million have been displaced internally within a country.
Hmm.
Now, and perhaps notably, a lot of these refugees who've originated from sub-Saharan Africa have settled in other countries on the continent. So a lot of the spillovers have been felt in other countries in the region.
Mm.
For example, Uganda and Chad, 3% of the population in these countries is refugees.
Wow.
So what can be the effect of such a large influx of people? It, of course, leads to social strains potentially. It can put pressure on delivery of public services. It can put pressure on local labor markets. So overall, we see that, you know, conflicts can have spillovers through very different channels, and these spillovers can be large.
And Mahvash, you just mentioned there the provision of social services is challenging in those circumstances. And so what are the, like, other fiscal implications for governments trying to deal with security issues at this scale?
Yeah. So in terms of the fiscal implications, what we find in our paper is that for countries that are in conflict, we observe that public finances can deteriorate significantly during conflicts. So the two sides, on both sides, so you have the revenue and the expenditure. So on the revenue side, what we will find is that conflicts typically reduce real revenue growth by about 10%.
Because they can't be collecting taxes
exactly.
or anything.
So then, again, it depends upon the intensity of conflict, how intensive conflicts are. The higher, the greater the intensity, the more difficult it becomes to collect revenues, etc. The other issue is, of course, they destroy part of the tax base, right? If you don't have growth, then there'll be no revenue to collect anyway. On the expenditure side, what we find is that on average in our sample, and our sample comprises about 45 sub-Saharan African countries over the last 20, 30 years. So on average, what we find is that the overall expenditure is not affected, but we do find some sort of change in composition where public capital expenditure tends to decrease and instead military spending goes up. So at the same time, where our work shows that, you know, there's conflicts tend to destroy physical infrastructure, they affect human capital, etc. And then you have this drop in public capital expenditure at the expense of a rise in military spending, which then aggravates the adverse consequences of conflicts. So basically, the fiscal situation is deteriorating at the time when they need resources the most.
So the research shows clearly that conflict has a significant impact on growth, but not so much for minor conflicts. What would you consider a minor conflict?
So, yes, as you mentioned, Bruce, that we find that perhaps not surprisingly, conflicts affect living standards substantially. but also that these effects are usually persistent over time. So on average, we find that growth is about 3 percentage points lower during conflicts than otherwise, driven by a decrease in investment, a decrease in exports, as well as productivity. And on the persistence, if we do some counterfactual analysis, which suggests that per capita GDP can be as much as 15 to 20% lower 5 years after the onset of conflict than in a no-conflict scenario. And as you were mentioning, we find non-linearities. Relatively minor conflicts do not tend to have a significantly negative effect on growth, while larger conflicts have a disproportionate effect.
But what would you consider a minor conflict?
So what we do is we use conflict-related deaths as a share of population as a measure of conflict intensity. So a minor conflict is just one where the death toll is relatively small compared to the population of the country. Why is it that these minor conflicts have relatively small effects? Probably because the destruction of physical and human capital are smaller. Potentially, the increase in uncertainty isn't as large. And while we say minor conflicts, it's hard to come up with a threshold as to where does the effect of conflict become large. Mm. But generally, what we find is that conflict intensity below the median, which is about less than 5 conflict-related deaths per million people, lead to relatively small effects.
Mm. And what about the lasting effects of conflict when countries are coming out of a conflict after having much of their infrastructure destroyed? There's such an infrastructure gap in the region as it stands. What are the lasting effects of that?
Right, exactly. As I was mentioning, we find that per capita GDP can be low for extended periods of time after conflicts. And probably one of the reasons for that is the destruction of physical capital and infrastructure. But I think it's more than just infrastructure. I think the destruction of human capital during conflict is also a very important aspect, which can lead to persistent effects. So what we find is that schooling, primary school enrollments are substantially lower during conflicts, especially for girls. Health outcomes tend to worsen. Life expectancy is, of course, lower due to direct conflict-related deaths. Yeah. But indicators like maternal mortality decline. Malnourishment rates among children go up. And what all of this means is that years after the end of a conflict, children who grew up during conflict periods have worse outcomes as adults. So you can really see a persistent effect due to the destruction of physical, but as also human capital.
Right. And so I thought it was interesting to see that some of the observations for this research were made using satellites or satellite imagery. Does technology help us better understand the real impact of conflict?
Yes, absolutely, I think. So technology and new data sources, including satellite-based nightlights data that we use, it really helps overcome some of the data challenges, especially in low-income countries.
Right.
So most low-income countries do not have data on economic activity at a spatially disaggregated level.
Hmm.
What I mean by that is that you know what the aggregate GDP growth rate for the country is, but you don't know which states within the country were growing more or less. Along with that, a lot of the conflicts, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, are concentrated in sub-regions within a country. So these conflicts are often localized. So just to give you a statistic, conditional on a country being in conflict, only about 40% of the states in that country face conflict-related deaths. So the fact that conflicts are not uniform across a country means that they're likely to be localized effects and potentially spillovers from that localized effect. But it's impossible to kind of analyze these local effects without having spatially disaggregated data on economic activity. And that's where satellite data comes in. It helps us construct a proxy for economic activity at the state or province level. And we can use this to get a much more granular picture of the effect of conflict in a country. And what this granular picture reveals is that, of course, conflicts have a very large local effect in the state where it happens, but also spillover effects to nearby states within that country, but also across countries. The spillover effect is about one third the size of the local effect and generally decreases with distance, which is what you'd expect. But kind of getting this granular picture really requires you to construct these disaggregated statistics which satellite data allows you to. Mm.
So both of you are in the business of helping governments deal with disruptions such as conflict and help them mitigate the risks. How can countries mitigate the effects of conflict?
So that is the critical question, right? The first best thing would be to, given the large costs of conflict, would be to try to prevent conflicts. So all sorts of efforts, financial as well as political resources to prevent conflicts are extremely important.
Mm. So investment upfront.
Now, of course, countries can do a lot themselves, as we mentioned at the beginning, where we find that, you know, country-specific factors like, you know, economic factors, social cohesion, addressing inequality, both of income as well as of, you know, opportunity across different types of groups, et cetera, could help to prevent conflicts. Maintaining institutions, strong institutions, investing in building state capacity can help. Beyond these factors, of course, you need political will, right?
Yeah.
And political effort is required. For countries in conflict, a clear implication of our finding is that efforts should be put in to mitigate the damaging effects, both in terms of physical infrastructure and human capital. And trying to maintain well-functioning institutions. Now, of course, that depends, again, on the intensity of conflict in a country. These things are, of course, much easier said than done, because at the same time, you don't have the resources, which is also something that our research shows. And in that respect, external assistance can help to alleviate these pressures, the fiscal pressures. So external assistance in the form of humanitarian aid, concessional financing. But it has to be well targeted and coordinated, not only for the countries that are involved in conflict, but as Siddharth just mentioned, given the spillover effects, you know, countries that are facing these, that may be under financial pressure in terms of absorbing the refugees. So in that respect, you know, the policy implications are both from the at the country level, but also at the international level. Efforts could focus on helping to provide resources for development spending.
Great. Thank you both.
Thank you.
That was
Mahvash Qureshi
and
Siddharth Kothari,
both economists in the Regional Studies Division of the IMF's African Department, talking about their research on the economic consequences of conflict in the latest Regional Economic Outlook for Sub-Saharan Africa. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.